The following podcast contains strong language and is not suitable for young listeners or workplace environment.
What? I just said yes to something that you said, and I have no idea what you said.
You're listening to FatCast. We've upped our game. Up yours.
All right, welcome to the FatCast. This is Engineer Al, and would you just look at the smile on my face? I'm really proud of my boys today. They did a really great job last week getting a ton of super interviews at WBC, the World Board Gaming Championships. You're going to hear some of them today and some of them in upcoming episodes. This episode is going to feature interviews with game designers Dan Raspler and Josh Temkin, as well as a fantastic discussion with Andy Lewis, who is the vice president of GMT Games. The boys are going to get some help in their interviews from Fortress personality Sag, who also did a fantastic job. So, without any further ado, let's go to WBC.
All right, this is a special edition of the FatCast. We are here live, recorded at the WBC 2012 is the year.
2012
right?
is the year that we are in.
So,
from where are we?
Beautiful Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
At the luxurious Lancaster host.
Lancaster.
All right, so we're here now with Dan Raspler, who's been on the show before.
Friend of the show.
Long time friend of the show.
Episode one, I believe.
That was our first interview. Our first interview was you.
First ever interview. You've come a long way.
Yeah, here we are again.
You've polished your act.
We've come some distance. So we want
both grown those awesome mustaches.
Yeah.
It's a week, man.
It's a week without shaving, you know? So we want to talk your new game
with you.
Spaceman versus Aliens.
Yes.
Give us the rundown.
It's a multiplayer, cooperative, outer space adventure game. It's sort of tactical combat, boarding an alien spaceship. Each player is a crewman, and you have the different captain or scientist, security chief, different roles for the players. Loads of gear, and the aliens, which come and attack you, are operated by a very simple AI. There's 6-7 different kinds of aliens, and you go on a series of different kinds of missions. There's a connecting campaign, and it's pretty intuitive once it gets rolling. It has a nice engine.
I blind play tested it, and I read the rules and played it, and it works great.
I think I've played it 3 times now, and I'm ready to own a copy of it.
We played it, set it up, and played it again immediately.
Yep. I really enjoy it.
It has a nice tension to it.
Yeah.
It's unusual in that it's like a retro sci-fi style. Aliens in bubble helmets and guys with ray guns and stuff.
Right.
But that kind of works with the cooperative nature of it. And we have a dozen missions, or 14 missions that you can go on, and it's pretty... The map is made up of tiles, interlocking hexes, and those form different shaped rooms and stuff like that on the spaceships. So you wander from tile to tile and hunt down your enemies.
Awesome. Right now it's currently unattached, but there are rumors swirling about this, that, or the other thing. We'll hear some stuff soon, maybe.
Yeah, we talked to a number of different publishers who were all interested in talking to us, and all the guys wanted to sign us, which is very exciting. The FatCast, I'm sure, has helped if you've ever mentioned it.
Yeah.
So it's good. We got some good word of mouth, for whatever that means, you know.
Matt Loader carries a lot of weight.
He does.
He knows how to work the buttons there.
Yes. With my pants.
With his pants.
In his pants. All right.
But yeah, you're about to go play test it some more. Certain to be named later illuminaries of the gaming world. So
yeah,
thank you very much. Thanks for the plug.
No problem.
I can't wait to have you back on again when we're talking about all the 5 different sequels in the Overwatch system.
Superheroes,
exactly.
Superheroes, man.
Young heroes in love.
I was talking to Al about it earlier.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
there's a lot of potential. It's a good system, and it's great for the Spaceman game, but Al's only talking about expanding. So we'll see where we can take it.
Awesome.
Talk to you guys soon.
All the way. That's where you're going to take it.
Thanks, Dan. All right, so we are now here with Josh Temkin of Tall Tower Games.
So Josh did this, is designed this game Wartime. It's been, I don't know, here playing, showing it off for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome. It's really cool. It's real time. You're moving chips around. You have to think. You got all these timers, and there's different size timers and shit. And depending on, you have to wait for the timer to run out. So you have your fast guys, but they're less powerful, and you only have one timer for that. I don't remember the details, but, you know, you're moving timers around and shit, and you got to do things quickly or else you get fucked over, and it's very cool.
It's a real-time war game, is what it is.
Games take, what, like 30 seconds?
Average game's about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Wow. It is the most intense 8 minutes.
Squad level? Person level?
Person level.
Mm.
Yeah, but it's really a game engine. It works at whatever scale you have. So anyway, we've been working on this game since, gosh, I think the initial inspiration was like 2004, 2005. Spent a lot of years working on it, just trying to refine it. It's got to be real crisp and simple, because in a real-time game, you do not have the time to check the rules. You can't be dealing with line of sight. There's no measurements, no rulers, no nothing like that.
It's all hexes, right?
It's hex-based, yep. You get your piece is in the hex, and when you want to move, you move. And then after that, you set a timer, and that guy can't do anything else until the timer drains. That simple. You want to shoot, you declare your target, you take the damage off the top, and then you set the timer.
So there's a map in this game, or is this his car?
Yeah.
Well, his car. Okay, so there's geography involved.
There's geography involved, yeah. Generally, the initial games, we don't play with any terrain, just because people have a hard enough time adapting to
their arms around
the real time.
So you're talking like open field, though. You're still talking about position left, right, front, and back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You got to worry about where your guys are relative to them. And it's wild.
It's definitely fun. It's cool because I played. I don't know if you ever even played a Josh, because like nobody did the Call of Duty real time combat card game. It was getting demoed a bit, so I play tested like maybe 5-6 years ago, and then it just Upper Deck was supposed to be doing it, and it totally shit the bed.
Yeah, Upper Deck shit the bed.
The game was awesome. You love it in Scry.
I wrote a review, and it was on the internet. Well, I wrote like an initial impressions review. I don't know where it may have been ended up, but I wrote the only review I think that exists, because not many people played it. But I really, really enjoyed it. And I was really bummed when it kind of didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think that you have the real-time thing is really cool, and not enough things are sort of exploring that in a cool way, because it definitely changes the way that you interact with the thought process of shooting a guy. It's not always going to be exactly what you want. You got to balance taking the time to think about what you're going to do with the fact that while you were thinking, you just got shot 4 times because you were thinking.
That's right. There's two really interesting aspects about this game. One is that real time, if you take too long to think, the other guy's going to shoot you first. And those couple seconds that you take add up over the course of the game. And that's one of the ways in which the game really clicks in mid and end game. But the other interesting thing is, there's no dice rolling in this game. This is entirely, players' actions. There's no randomness at all.
100% skill-based, so it's great for tournaments. I know you do the tournament every year. Did you do the tournament this year, or was I drunk and wandered off somewhere?
No, I just got here. I'm lucky to have gotten here the last night.
Okay, right on. But yeah, you've done the tournament the last few years. It's been like, it seems really good. I played and got my ass kicked by like an 8-year-old or whatever. You got these little kids that are sharks at it, which is also cool, because once they figure it out, while you're like really slow and still trying to learn it, they will definitely crush you. But it seems like it's awesome for tournaments, because A, it plays quick, and B, it's you lost because you lost. There's no complaining about
excuses,
this. No excuses. You just win or lose, and it's 100% skill-based, which is also rare and cool in a simple, sort of fast game like that.
Yep.
Mm. Where are you at now as far as, like, publisher? I know people have been interested. I mean, is there... Where are you looking at? Are you looking at, like, Kickstarter? Or, you know, where... When can we play Wartime not with you at WBC?
Oh, okay.
Well, or, you know, coming to your house.
We're stealing the copy.
Right. You can come to my house. I mean, it's that would save me the trip. But it's, and I assure you, it's well worth it.
You don't want me to come to your house, Josh. I'm sorry. I have to put the foot down there. I'm a terrible guest. Horrible person.
We do
not
have
a great host either.
So I go over all the time. I never have food. We go and we order pizza.
Yeah, and then Josh Luck always takes the last piece like an asshole.
That's what you get for being a poor host. Your wife tells you you're a poor host. I'm just kidding. Matt Lord is a fine host.
Well, I tell you what, Matt, I've got two pieces of pizza that have been in the back of my fridge for 3 months now. You're welcome to them.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So we've got a... We're hooked up with Valley Games to get this published, and we are developing the scenarios for it. What we have is an engine, and it, you know, we just need to decide what time frame we want to work with and get the pieces right and a bunch of scenarios right.
Are you guys thinking of sticking with like a poker chip format? Because that seems to work really well. So you're going to stick with chips? Because that's another thing that I was always thinking about, the production, you know, prototype. You got the chips, you got the stuff. Are you going to, you know, stick with a similar format? Is there some other way to do it that's even feasible?
We spent a lot of years looking at different ways to do it. And, in fact, the great breakthrough on this game was switching to the poker chips. Because
mm-hmm.
We were prototyping with Ice House pieces for about 4 years.
A little fumblier.
Yeah.
All that THC resin stuck on the outside, they kind of stick together, and you're trying to, you know.
Yeah, it was, and what we realized was that we were putting damage chips on the board, and then you'd have to count them, and you'd have to clean a whole lot more off when you killed a piece. And we finally just said, let's reverse that and say take the damage off as you're doing it. So you start the piece, you know, as a height of poker chips, and then you take the damage off. So the board just naturally stays cleaner that way.
Right.
Fewer things to knock over. And when we looked for how to do that, the poker chips were the right size, the right feel, and it was at that point that everything clicked. Because the game had been done for basically 2.5 years by that point. But the components weren't working. We were demoing it right and left, and it wasn't picking, it just wasn't catching on.
Right.
But when we switched to the poker chips, everything gelled and it all came together, and it is the awesome game that you saw.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every, you know, last couple of years that I've been noticing it and paying attention, it seems like you've really had a lot of interest. You know, a lot of people, it always seems like there's people always playing it. You know, when you're here in setup, there's always a bunch of people playing it, always a bunch of people standing around. That's the thing, too, is board games, a spectator sport, kind of sucks, generally speaking. However, 8-minute games, if you're playing a tournament, actually it's kind of fun to watch somebody like, you know, flipping around, you're trying to see what's happening, you know, you're not watching people think, you're watching people act, which is definitely, you know, a lot more interesting to experience.
Yeah, so that's kind of a neat story too, because we've been looking at it. One of the fun things is watching people play. And so we've been making a little game of it, sort of a meta game of spectator. And so I've put some feelers out to some game design buddies. Let's make a game for the spectators to play, a meta game. So, you know, how well do you spectate and do the announcer kind of thing? It's really cool, like in football games or hockey.
You got play-by-play and then a color man.
That's right. Exactly. He's like, oh, man, he didn't see that move over there. You know, now he's got to watch out for the run. The other guy's going to try to run the piece off the board. Is he going to see it or not? And it winds up being really fun for the spectators.
No, it's good. I could absolutely see, like, getting a couple sets and having, like, you know, 10 guys over. Or girls, you know, whatever. I mean, I would probably have, you know, 9 girls and myself, of course. But
for the record, first world champion 3 years ago was Stephanie Welch.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. I met her last year. You know, you have everybody over, and you kind of, you know, you do rounds. You set up a whole little tournament format, and you can actually do it, you know? Like, and you're kind of still interacting with each other. It's still a social thing for everybody involved. And everybody's kind of there watching it, doing it. It seems like it actually can transcend into that almost, like ping pong space. Not like the ping pong's the greatest, but that kind of more social gaming activity as opposed to like a board game. You know, it kind of has that.
Right, and if it's short enough, you actually get a chance to come up for air every now and again. You get
exactly.
The whole nine yards.
Yeah, yeah, yep. No. I mean, so what? Do you have any idea on time frame? I mean, you're.
Yeah, because I just made things a sale while you were talking about it. The gentleman really? In uniform that just walked by, right, he's stationed up at Fort Indian Town Gap, and he's from Tennessee.
Really?
And he's like, what are you talking about? I said, oh, it's this real-time war game where, you know, you turn it over to Santa, and he's like, what's the name of it? He got out his pen, and he, like, wrote it down on his card. So yeah. He just got a sale. But you got to sell it. You got to make the game.
Yeah, send him over to my table. I'll be setting it up shortly.
Well, he's the guy in camouflage, yeah. So if you can find him, you'll be all set.
Well, that camo's going to be tough, but I'll work it.
Well, look for the one guy that's in shape here.
Right. Yeah, that's yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, so do you have other stuff going on, or are you just hanging out at somebody else's table?
The guy at my table is a friend of mine, Joe Hopkins. He's another developer in my game design group, and when I wasn't using the table, I let him use it.
Oh, okay. So, no, I was just wondering if you had something else that you were cooking and it was something
I've got. I've got Throne Dice, which is we delivered final copy to the publisher last week.
Cool.
So now we just got to...
Can you say who's doing that?
That's Alpha Valley.
Okay, right on. Cool.
So I've got that, and I've got components from the first expansion.
How do you like working with Torben? You can be honest. I mean, he's an asshole, right?
I like Torben.
No, I'm kidding. I love Torben. He's awesome. We're going to get him on here later, and he's going to give me the business about Kickstarter. Because I gave him a really hard time about D-Day Dice.
Oh, yeah?
And how unprofessional it was to kickstart something for an established company. And he
just walked up here, didn't he?
Yeah, he definitely fucking laughed at my face.
No. You weren't looking. He gave you the finger, and then he walked away.
Oh, he did? Really?
Actually, D-Day Dice I saw here for the first time last year. And I was so intrigued by it that I went home to my game design group and gave them a challenge. Make a game uses custom dice. You put whatever you want on the sides of it, but it can't be 1 through 6.
Right.
And so I have with me one of my designs in response to that challenge. So come on over and check that out a little later.
Awesome. Cool. So the game design group, tell us about that. That's how you kind of hinted at it a couple times now.
So back around 2003, one or two friends and I started a game design group. It's called Table Treasure Games.
We actually have a website.
This is in Maryland.
In Maryland?
Yeah.
That's all you're going to tell us. You don't want to give away the secret location.
Odenton, Maryland.
That's where John is a Maryland man.
That's right. My buddy Jeff Quayle goes to a design group in Odenton, Maryland.
Jeff Quayle is in my group.
My condolences.
In fact, it turns out I live right down the street from him.
Oh, my condolences.
So shitty neighborhood and shitty friends, apparently, Josh.
But my place is the place to be on the second Friday of the month. In fact, we've grown now. We've got, I think, 50 official members on the roster.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding.
And how many show up on a typical Friday?
We're getting 15, 16, 17 showing up.
The rest have dates or something otherwise.
Yeah, well, some of them have moved out of the country, and, you know, we're sending them off on missions, expanding the influence.
Awesome. That seems really cool. Plug that again. Say the name. You got a website that's kind of open. Do you have to, like,
Table Treasure Games.
Secret handshake kind of
thing. No, we've got an open website, Table Treasure Games. We've just started populating it with games.
Awesome. Cool.
So, we got a lot of good stuff. So Joe Hopkins is here. He's got Companies Incorporated. Ben Rossett is here. He was showing off Mars Needs Mechanics, which I think is going with Nevermore Games.
Okay.
Yeah, I just saw that. They were demoing that down here for, like, all week long.
Yeah, I was working with him doing some play tests earlier in the month.
All right.
Or I should say last month, because...
Is he really going to sell a metal board, or is that just for demo?
I don't know. I'm not in on that. I was just helping with the cards.
It has a galvanized steel board, and the playing pieces are like steel nuts, at least on the demo.
The steel nuts are very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's a really... But I don't know anything about the production.
Huh. Awesome. Josh...
Except that I'm going to buy a copy when it's...
Awesome. Well, Josh, thanks for coming by. We really appreciate it. We're definitely going to try to swing by.
I'm
going to
go and try to play some
more time.
Yeah,
absolutely. It takes like 5 minutes to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Awesome. I want to play it, too.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
We're definitely stoked on it. The FatCast is about it. You should check us out sometime on the internet. Maybe listen to us.
I will.
Maybe now that you're on it.
Maybe even listen.
Yeah, exactly. All right. But, super stoked to hear that it's moving forward. Yeah, can't wait for it to come out, man.
Yeah.
There are very few games that get me excited anymore, and that is absolutely one of them. So,
well, I tell you what, next year, because I don't think we're going to be able to do it this time, but next year, why don't you officiate or sportscast for the tournament?
All right, we can talk about that.
That might be fun, man. Yeah,
I got to talk to my slave master back there, Mr. Zev. I don't know what my schedule's like, because he cracks that whip.
Let out of the cage.
Yeah, he cracks the whip pretty hard on me, but... We'll see.
All right.
But yeah, definitely, we'll talk.
Great. Well, thanks,
man. I'll give you a card and stuff when we're off the
awesome.
Air. We'll be business.
Awesome.
But yeah, cool. Definitely. Thanks a lot,
awesome.
Man.
We'll swing by.
Oh. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Here, let me get you a card.
That's what?
That counts. So here we are with Andy Lewis of GMT Games.
GMT Games.
GMT A.
A?
No.
No, it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Enjoy the games.
So it's AGMT. All right. We see how that's going. All right. You heard it here first, folks.
Yep.
But here we are. Andy Lewis, GMT. WBC 2012 finally have tricked you into stopping by the FatCast.
Yeah, I missed that.
He took a wrong turn.
I thought I
should
have gone down the middle now. I'm like, damn.
Oh, no. So, Andy, what's hot
right now?
What's
going on at GMT?
What's happening?
What's hot?
Yeah, what do you guys got in the pipeline? Plug some stuff.
Well, I mean, the biggest thing right now that everybody, because we have the P500s pickups here, is Andy and Abyss, which is the first in the Coin series, which is, we think, going to be a really hot series.
It's awesome.
Gene really loves it, and the players are liking it. It's extremely different, and, I mean, there's already two other games on the P500 for it. Cuba Libre, which is on Cuban Revolution, mm-hmm. and then A Distant Plane, which is Afghanistan.
Okay.
And here, I'll give you an exclusive breaking the news.
All right, awesome.
Here we go.
There's going to be
everybody lean in.
There's going to be a fourth title coming up pretty soon that Volker Runke, who's the designer of the Coin series, and Mark Herman together are going to do a Vietnam Coin series.
Oh, that's awesome. That's actually that's my preferred conflict.
Well,
I'm not even being an idiot now. I'm actually I was political science. Like I was working on a doctorate in political science, and Vietnam was like my thing. So actually, really,
well, we've been trying to get a CDG from Mark Herman on Vietnam for years. I mean, a decade ago, probably at least, after We the People came out and For the People came out, we came up with the title Against the People, which is what the Vietnam game was.
Well, so we know which side
first.
We know which side GMT voters there brought on.
But that was a long time ago, So, and Mark was like, I don't know whether this will ever happen, and it just comes out that this series really works well for it. So the two of them are very excited and getting work on it, so that'll be coming up.
So what is it? What is it? I'm unfamiliar with the Coin series.
I was unfamiliar with the Coin series until Friday night when I got my copy and started reading.
Okay, so what is its deal? Like, why is it?
It's not a card-driven game. It's a card-assisted game. You don't have a card hand.
Okay.
You turn over a card, which is the card for this turn, and you know what the card for next turn is. And there is an event on the card, and then there's player order for the different factions. The first faction who is available to go can say they're doing it, and they have three options. They can do the operations, they can do operations with special activities, or they can do the event. Depending on what that player does, you go down the other factions in order, and if they choose to act on it, then they're limited in what they can do based on what the first player chose.
Okay.
But the key is you can never be active on two consecutive cards. So if you take an action on this card, you're not taking an action on the next card.
Gotcha.
So you got to plan that out. And then the other key that's very different about the Coin series, because it's for counterinsurgency, is that each player is very different in what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Very different victory conditions, very different things that they're trying to do.
How many factions are we talking?
Four.
Okay, so it's four-player game.
Four-player game.
Well, it's a 1-4 player
right.
game because there is actually AIs for all four players. And so when you play without...
So you can mix and match.
Yes, when That's you play cool. without, the other players play by AI.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yep.
Awesome.
So you can play any four factions you want.
I understand everything you said, except what does that have to do with coins?
Coins sounds for counterinsurgency.
All right. There we go. All right.
Makes sense.
I thought you were going to be like, flipping some stuff.
No, that seems
a little lowbrow for GMT.
Yeah. And it's a mounted board production with a lot of the pieces are all wood. There's a few cardboard counters in there and stuff like that. So
yeah, we have definitely said in the past that you guys have definitely set the bar for war game type stuff.
Well, we're trying. I mean, the rules aren't very long. I think the actual rules were about 12 pages, but the mechanics are very different. And with the asymmetric, I know that the first games that people will play are going to take a long time. Just plain and simple, because it's so different than what you're used to.
Yeah. That's great, because
it's
so interesting.
Come down. Yeah.
I mean, that's so much more interesting, I think, than
here's,
Eastern
here's
Front,
another,
where to smash our dudes and
right.
ear dudes. I mean, there's a place for that, and that's cool, but I really am interested in the... the idea of, you know, I mean, it's like Hearts and Minds almost, you know, like right. that idea, like that trending into that idea of the really asymmetrical goals. How are we simulating these very, very different operational strategies and you know, different ways of approaching the conflict as the different sides? And I think that sounds awesome.
Well, and it's really going to open up the ability to do a lot more modern conflicts, because that's really the type of style that was going on.
That's mm-hmm. what's going on in real life.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You
right.
do have multiple, and it's always nice when you get up above two players anyway, because yeah, when you're yeah. talking war games, everything plays two players.
Right.
It's
yeah,
nice
yeah,
to
yeah.
see stuff that brings up.
So, I mean, you know, and they seem, the games seem to be coming together very quickly.
Well, let me ask you, here comes a hard-hitting, like, question.
Okay.
You talk about modern conflicts, right?
Right.
I mean, how do you feel about, are there subjects that are inappropriate, or subjects you won't touch? Are there elements that you won't touch? Do you feel your job as a game publisher in the war games field, right? If you're doing like, you know, the War of Independence, the U.S. War of Independence, everybody's dead, right? There's nobody that's really feeling residual effects from that conflict.
Right, right. And all the Americans know.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. We won, we're awesome. But I mean, do you feel like as you trend into more modern stuff, is there a responsibility as a game publisher? I mean, I know we've talked with this with John.
Kaniski, okay.
You know about the Indian stuff, right?
Right?
You know,
right.
that kind of threw the spotlight on it. I mean, do you, you know, how, where do you guys come down on that? I mean, do you feel like you're historians, you're just doing your thing, and it's, you're not trivializing because you're being really historic? I mean, do you?
Well, we ran through a lot of stuff with
Labyrinth.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
No, exactly,
yeah.
exactly.
You know,
I haven't talked to you about that.
Yeah,
either, so, you know.
I mean, you know, so that's one of the things. I mean, you know, we got a lot of flack from that, but the people who really looked at the game and saw what we did was we weren't glorifying either side in the war, you know, with everything going on. We were just telling it like it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's factual information that's put out there.
Right, and let people draw,
you know,
conclusions.
You got to draw your own. I mean, it's, you
that
know, a lot of Vietnam games haven't been done because of the fact that it's still relatively new for the generations that are playing war games.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. A bunch of them fought it.
Yeah, there are very strong opinions. You know, someone who studied it, you know, academically, you accidentally say something and all of a sudden, like...
Right, and so, you know, so it's very tough. So, I mean, I think that's why, you know, I'm really excited about the Coin Series one on this, because Mark Herman's such a historian on it, and Voco's got such the other. And I think that we didn't get the game from Mark yet because he hasn't found the right way to present what he feels is the important things about the war.
Uh-huh.
It's not a U.S. versus Vietnam thing.
Well, that's right.
North Vietnamese.
Well, so that's the thing.
It's an inter Vietnamese struggle with,
right, there's so
with
much
extra
going
powers
on
going on.
That's actually really. I'm Andy, man. Andy is on point with the history here, man. I love it. Because actually,
I'll tell you, it's not me. I mean, it's what, you know. I've listened to Volko and Mark talk about it. You know, really talking about.
Well,
those
just
things.
It's an academic thing. You're not just
right.
saying like, all right, there's two sides. Like, oh, you know, the Viet Cong had, you know, I don't know, bigger guns. You know, they had these little guns, and then these guys, they're hitting on, you know, fives and sixes, and then the U.S. are hitting on three, you know, three plus three. Because, you know, they're tougher, you know, whatever.
Right.
And that's how it's going to go. You know, it's a real refreshing approach, I guess, because
right.
for so long my experience has been that there was a lot of academic effort put forth in, like, World War II era and
mm-hmm.
before, and that level, you know, it's always been sort of a touchy subject, and I think, you know, me and Josh have talked about it, maybe not on the show, but, you know, I think wargaming overall has a bit of a more hawkish bent,
right.
I would say,
mm-hmm.
the people that are in it. You know, for good or bad, you know, no judgment call, but definitely there's not glorification, but it's definitely, well, there are some fucking weirdos that
right.
are, like, you
right.
know, dressing up as SS guys and, like, you know, whatever. But there's definitely a more hawkish element. I think that there's you're always going to have people arguing, you know, about
mm-hmm.
your portrayal of something. Is it too pro this or pro that? And it's a really difficult minefield to navigate.
Sure. Well,
so,
I mean, even Andy and Abyss is that. I mean, because one of the players is the cartels. They're the drug dealers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, exactly, yeah. exactly.
You know, and that's part of what their strategy is. They have to deal with the shipments and people fighting over the shipments.
Yeah, and to a large extent, I mean, war games, there are so many war games that are about World War II where the lines are pretty doggone stark. You're the good guys, you're the bad guys.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if you're playing the bad guys, you're like, oh, you know, somebody has to play the bad guys, it was my turn.
Right.
So you
yep.
can get away with that. You start getting into things like Vietnam, you start getting things like Afghanistan, there's a lot more shade of gray in there, there's a lot more unsettled business, and I think that tends to be a more touchy subject.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no,
it
exactly.
It definitely is.
Yeah,
well, and plus, it's as you're talking about with the revolution, I mean, a lot more of the people that are around, you know, live through that.
Right.
I mean, you know, Vietnam, yeah, some of the, you know, the vets are getting up there, but, you know, Afghanistan, I mean, shoot.
This guy's walking around the floor.
Still going.
This guy walking around the floor here in his fatigue or in his, and he came back from Afghanistan. So, and even something as simple as the cover of the box, where, you know, if that rifle is pointed down versus pointed up or something like that, is the kind of thing that could get somebody's hackles up.
Right.
And one of the things we talk about, I do outreach. We actually, BWI, Baltimore Washington International Airport, is right around the corner from me. A lot of the men come through there because that's one of the primary shipping points for everybody came back from Afghanistan. One of the things they talk about is when you meet these guys, you don't talk about war. I'm bringing kids. I mean, Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts. You don't talk about war. You don't talk about guns. You don't talk about what they do for a living. They're done with it. They're back in the States. You talk about football. You talk about baseball. You talk about, do you want to get a beer? I mean, that kind of stuff. And so, I mean, a lot of that is still very much on the surface, even for these guys, just because they need to step away from it.
Right.
So it's a tender subject.
But I think it's also really important that it's getting done because, so I'm a history teacher. Well, actually, I quit being a history teacher. I was a history teacher. I'm a certified history teacher.
You've done a lot of, a doctorate, was a teacher.
I also drink heavily, Andy. So it's not all business with Matt Loader. But I think games and simulations are an incredible tool, I think, for you to understand a conflict or understand the different way the sides are thinking. Not that it's going to give you everything. It's not going to give you, but just the idea of stepping into the shoes, I think, is that, like, looking at why someone would have made a decision that they made that you look at as, like, well, this is kind of monstrous, or this is that, or this is, it casts you in a far more nuanced understanding of what's going on, because now you're looking at things from this, like,
and you're putting you're putting yourself in their boots and to come to the same moral dilemmas.
So I think it's awesome. I wish more educators would look at that and see that that's a strong possibility. I mean, do you guys do any? Have you ever tried doing any like outreach to like education or like writing lesson plans for some of the games that you can get into, like, history, high school AP history classes and stuff like that?
Not that much, Matt.
I mean, because that's
if only they had a resource to do that kind
if
of
only they knew someone. Yeah, if they knew a certified history teacher.
But see, that's what, I mean, Victor's Point has done that, with our Revolt and Revolution game that's on P500 with the State of Siege series. One of the designers that's helping us with that, and actually will be previewing his game in that. It hasn't been released from Victory Point, but will be in there, is John Welsh, who is a history teacher in California, in Northern California. And he has done that for his games that he already did, Levy Unmasked. Is provided a teaching lesson plan on how to introduce it in high school history classes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. That's really awesome.
And those games are usually like pretty accessible rules wise.
I tell you, you're gonna pluck future customers out doing that. So that serves them very well too in the long term.
Well, and he does. It's like we, with so much of what we do, we don't assign projects to people. People send us ideas, and we're like, do you want to design it? Because we don't have in-house designers, really, per se. And we don't assign, somebody comes up with a great topic, or we think up a great topic and say, here, do this. We take the topic, the games on topics that people want to design. If they're passionate about it and they're interested, they do all the research to get it right.
Yep.
So for this teaching thing, John Welsh, who is a teacher and wants to share his love of games and his love of history with the students and involve them in the mental, he's the perfect person to write that for them.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But that's the kind of thing.
So that's something that's still in research and development.
No, he's got one out there because Victory Point released Levy Unmasked.
No. I'm talking the game you're talking about, the faction, the Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, the Vietnam game was discussed this week, in the last 3 days.
Hot scoops.
So what is printing or near printing? What is going to land between now and Christmas?
I don't even know.
Like what's
well, Andy and
right
Abyss.
Now?
Andy and Abyss
is
going to
be a big one.
Fab Sicily just came out, right? How new is that?
I'm trying to think how new it is. It's probably end of last year or the beginning of this quarter. Yeah,
I'm behind the curve.
See, I think we're very divided up in GMT.
I like that system. I played Fab the Ball, Jim. Okay. I rather liked it. So
yeah, well we got the new one. I mean, down in the GMT demo areas, Rick Young had out the next one in that series, which is Golan 73, which he's co-designing with Michael Gustafsson from Sweden. He had an interest in it.
Yeah.
So he did all the heavy, you know, the heavy lifting on research and stuff like that. And now he's hooked up with Rick to smooth out all the kinks and everything. And
yeah.
that one's coming along. And that's going to go up on P500 very shortly.
All right, so. Awesome. So switching gears a little bit. Ugh, I should. Yeah. So yeah. Switching gears a little bit with my man voice. Yeah. Leaping Lemmings was like... No, I mean, seriously, I love that game.
I just came from the semifinal
love
of it.
Yeah, how'd you do?
I lost because of 50-50 card draw on the last play for game over, and instead it was a 5, and I lost by 1 point when I had the tiebreaker.
Oof. So... Clearly not the usual GMT fare. Not what you think of when you think of GMT.
Correct.
Right? A little bit lighter. What other children's games do you have in the works? Our listeners, some of our listeners are serious adults. Many of them are, you know.
See that? No flex in that box whatsoever.
We don't specifically have any in the works. But that's the key is that I don't necessarily know what games are coming down the pipeline. I know Rick Young is actually working on another family-oriented game. With his wife.
Awesome. We'll get him over here later.
But it's going, you know, it's still in progress. I mean, in general, I don't hear from designers that we've already worked with, I don't hear what they're working on until they say, hey, Andy, I got a project for you now.
How interested are you guys in continuing to expand into that sort of
broader
non-traditional, broader spectrum of titles?
Oh, I'd love to go there because I like to produce games that I like to play, and I play all kinds of games.
Yep.
So, you know, and Gene has family, and so he plays those kind of games, the Euro games. You know, I played Euros when we had somebody who used to buy, you know, $3,000 worth of games and distribute them around, and you had to translate the rules yourself. So I've been playing Euros forever. So we'd love to. Part of the problem we have is the P500 system. The P500 system is great for war games.
Because they're used to it. Wargamers know what it is.
They're used to it, and they're used to order.
Very dedicated audience for that kind of thing.
And Euros don't pre-order, so we
not
you know,
all the same way. At least
in general, they don't. They just don't.
Well, I was going to say.
Well,
maybe
now
you guys
they do.
Looking at some Kickstarter stuff. I mean, is that something that you are looking? I mean, obviously you must have looked at it, right? I mean, you're deciding that it's a terrible idea. It sounds like.
No, I'm not. I don't think it's a terrible idea. The biggest problem I have with Kickstarter...
You're a respectable adult publisher that doesn't need to do such things, right?
No, that's not it at all. The problem that I have is that we have a team together. We have developers. We have, you know, the people that are you know, me evaluating or Gene evaluating, coming in, understanding. We have Mark Simonich, who does, you know, a lot of the rules editing, a lot of the artwork. We have a lot of checks and balances all through the system. We have a lot of playtest groups and stuff that just understand what kind of quality we want to put out in a game. And I get a lot of projects that people send in that go, oh, man, I've got the greatest thing since sliced bread. And you kind of get into it and go, no, not really. And Kickstarter doesn't necessarily provide those safeguards.
It doesn't have that development step that
Correct.
Takes a product. And
it'll, and it allows anybody with any kind of project to say, hey, I want to kickstart this. And they get money and... There's no guarantee of the quality of the game.
Right. So,
that's a problem.
What happens when GMT comes out and saying, and this on Kickstarter's website says, GMT presents, and you're putting your name out there and you're saying, look, we have the street cred, we have the kind of credibility that you can trust this. And I mean, you're still putting it through the same process.
Yeah, we just probably won't do that. I don't know. I'm not on the finance side. I haven't looked at it. We've got our P500 system, which does what we want to do. I don't know if Gene and Tony talking about it from the finance side, something different.
How long does a typical game take to get through GMT's P500?
Anywhere from 6 months to 6 years.
Really depends on the interest.
Depends on the interest, depends on the topic. Depends on the designer.
I think the thing, too, with
I think the Vietnam coin game, you know, if it takes 30 days to reach 1,000 orders, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
You know, I think the interest by that time will just be so high. And with Volko Runke and Mark Herman on the box
and
cover.
And more than two players in a relatively unique subject matter,
yes.
I think, yeah.
You know, I think those numbers would just skyrocket.
I mean, are you guys still going to even put that in P500? You put in P500, but you're basically, you know, you're going to print it, like...
No.
Soon later. Everything goes through
P500, yep. and we put stuff through P500 on reprints and stuff like that, even if we know we're going to reprint it whether we get it or not, because we want to provide our customers who are loyal to us and support us the opportunity to buy from us at a deep discount.
Right.
As far as the discount we can go, I mean, we understand that online retailers could do better, but, you know, the deep discount that we can give to continue to support us. So we put everything on P500. That's just the way we do things.
No, that's great. I mean, it's cool, too, because you allow people the opportunity to support you and support the projects that they actually care about. You know,
right.
It's you know,
yeah,
the
it's
market.
A dependable business model, too. People know they come to GM.
You guys are respectable. They know it's going to they know it's going to be a good game.
Right.
And they know it's going to be a high-quality production. And they want
to,
you know, if it's,
and
if it's what interests
first,
them, yeah,
they get the dollars.
They're in.
Right.
I mean, it's I imagine it's not the same calculus for people that don't have the sort of clout
correct
that you guys do, you know, so.
And it's taken us a long time to build that up. I mean, you know, this isn't something that just happened overnight or anything like that, so.
Right, and you know, I'm sitting here teasing about, I got a copy of Leaping Lemmings in my hand. It feels solid. Before you even crack the plastic, you're like, okay, something's going on here.
Yes. That was, you know, when I bought Command of Colors Ancients.
Oh my God, yeah.
That box was just like,
yeah,
man, this
it.
Thing feels solid. This is awesome. Yeah.
Have you guys looked at, or have you taken any, do you have any interest, potentially, in branching out into doing stuff beyond, you know, like blocks and chips? I mean, have you guys looked at, are you just
like
totally
in
over
the electronic market?
We're over plastic.
I know you guys are doing the electronic stuff, which is really exciting.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I mean, are you guys just totally like, you know, fuck plastic? Like, it's just not our scene. Like, we're just not gonna go there. It's
not
worth
it.
Like,
it's definitely not our scene. It's not where our customer base is. It's not where, it's just not that. I mean, Tony does miniatures. He used to do miniatures and paint miniatures, but Gene and I aren't miniatures players. You know, I prefer the blocks. You know, I love the Command & Colors series, and that includes, you know, Battle Cry and includes Memoir 44 and, you know, some of the others. But I don't play those games nearly as much anymore because it's plastic pieces. I'd rather have the blocks.
Well, most of them aren't as good as Ancients either, so, you know, I mean. But, you know, I mean, hey.
I think they're all different and stuff like that. It's just, to me, to a certain extent, the blocks really add a lot
easier.
More visual effect, and for me, I find much easier to
well,
to move.
Four sides doesn't hurt any when you're working the step-downs and that sort of thing.
No, we don't.
Right.
They're not.
Yeah.
The blocks are solely.
Right, for that particular game, but for,
right,
for
yeah,
some,
yeah.
It's nice to be
yeah,
able
yeah.
to have four sides.
Right.
But at the same time, I like the stand-up aspect just because I think it brings the game to life a little bit.
Right,
more.
Yep.
I mean, I'm a child. I like minis, so I still...
and I'm not. It adds a lot more expense. It adds a lot more upfront costs and stuff like that, and I just
that's
don't
story.
See...
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
see us going that way.
No, I mean, I certainly don't... I don't mean to say
right,
that
right,
criticism at all. I'm more just, you know, asking the hard-hitting questions that our listeners
that.
Demand.
I understand that.
You know.
And not what your audience is anticipating either. I mean,
right.
You've built this brand. If you step too far out of that, you're going to throw people off their game. You're going to start muddying the mix.
Maybe. Maybe I'm more worried about, you know, doing the games because we, you know, this is a second job for me. I don't do this full time.
Right.
This I still consider this my hobby. You know, we want to produce games that
hell
I think
of
are
hobby,
fun.
Andy, man.
I was gonna say.
Yeah.
Well, as he takes his vacation time to come to Lancaster.
Right. You know, I happen to, you know, Leaping Lemmings got done because all five principals liked the game. And for
it's
us
awesome.
All to agree on a game is pretty amazing.
That's pretty few and far between.
Yeah. Yes, because we all have very different tastes. But this is a great game. But, you know, for the taste. And, you know, people who play this don't understand that necessarily that this is an introductory war game.
Oh, yeah.
It teaches all the principles.
I was talking to somebody about that today.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, it's very...
It's very Euro-y.
They said it's very Euro-y. And
no,
I was like,
not.
That's bullshit. I was like, it's a war game. You get zone of control. Yeah. You have stacking limits. Like,
right.
Get the fuck out of here. Like,
air war overhang.
Yeah, like, are you kidding me? Like, it's clearly a war game.
But see, the Euro gamers don't know that. You know, so you can play with them. And they go, okay, here's a simple war game. Now, see, all those things you learned in Leaping Lemmings? Here you go. Now you
it's
see
a trick.
The difference.
It's a trick.
Nazis in it. You're all set.
I'll tell you what, my wife is a gamer. My wife loves playing games. She really loves Leaping Lemmings, but she won't even touch like HeroScape. You know,
okay.
No interest in like dudes shooting dudes. You know, like that's she's not into just for whatever reason.
She doesn't like the
violence.
Well,
she doesn't like the no, she doesn't like the violence. But she likes zombie games. She like isn't that for just whatever reason. She has no problem like murdering the shit out of a bunch of like rodents. But when it comes to like, you know, if I was like, hey, let's play, you know, some similar level war game,
right?
Fuck out of here with that. This is not gonna happen. So it's a really interesting situation. And I played with so many different people too. I mean, it's definitely Fat Cast approved. I think very hard.
Okay.
Leaping Lemmings. We are about it. Anything else? Anything else to play?
I'd owned this game about a year. Steve can even tell you. It was just sitting on our shelf, and finally we managed to crack it open and get it out. And now this is like in heavy rotation on my game.
Well, see, that's what you get for not reading my review early on.
No, I didn't read your review.
It's not John.
It's not us.
It's not me. It's our other guys in our group.
So finally we managed to crack this thing open. And then the other day we're out playing, and I'm like playing Wings of War, and I got a bunch of guys going. And I turn around and look, and this has come out of my bag without me begging and pleading this time. This is the game, and they're spreading it on to other people. So I don't know if you still got copies of this sitting on the shelf, but you probably
do. We do
a couple of sales down my way, because
I
get the feeling once people get an eyeball on this game and see the inside of the box, they go, "Wow, you know, that's actually a pretty good game. I like that." And it's obviously straightforward enough. For the
it is.
It's a very low entry game.
And come to PressCon or come to WBC, because we give a deal on this one here.
Yeah,
awesome.
Oh yeah, for the people that play. It's a good price. I won't even mention it. So
it's so low. You show up.
I might have a few left.
Click to see price.
A few. Yeah. Well, it is pretty much that. So
anything else you want to talk about? Any new stuff? Any?
No, because I don't know the new stuff.
How's life, Andy? You doing good?
It's fine. It's fine.
What could be better? Right? Hanging out, playing games all week, having a good time.
Definitely.
You guys having a good show?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm always
empty in the truck.
Big time.
I always feel so embarrassed. You guys roll up with this enormous box truck, and I'm like, I filled up the hatchback. Like, I got my few boxes.
So many plumes,
well, we shipped 65 boxes from the office directly to Lancaster. I had 7 flown in, 7 boxes of Andy and Abyss flown in from China. I had 2 boxes from Spearworks flown in from Germany. And I probably brought about 40 boxes from my house. So we had plenty of games here to sell.
Yeah, well, I saw this guy like right near the end of the day. I think you were helping him out too. Every yep. Ancients box you had.
Oh yeah.
He bought like this dude. It was a stack of games like as tall as me.
Yeah.
And he just
them?
Yeah.
All the Ancients.
How much was it? Do you remember how much that was?
No.
It was insane. I looked at it. I was like, that dude's about to drop like $500. Like, that's ridiculous.
Jeez.
And that's not. He's probably not the only one today. I mean,
well, he was from Finland though, so.
I mean, whatever. I'm not throwing stones. If you have the income to do it, like, that's awesome. Good for him, man. I mean, I'm jealous. If anything, I'm jealous. But
no, I think it was for him.
Well, it was one of each. It wasn't.
Oh, it was one of each.
The same. No, yeah, it was one of each. I mean, this guy was like,
he was
balls deep into Ancients. I mean, that guy was like.
Well, they may be twice as much in Finland, so he's like, look, if I'm in.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, this is definitely your scene.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, the booth sales have been good.
Well, that's awesome, man. Well, thanks for stopping by finally.
You saw
that I don't say horrible things the whole time.
No,
right?
I know. I tried to avoid it. No, actually, I'm like, I know I need to go do something. I'm not sure what it was when Sleeping Lemmings came by. I'm like, I know I got to go up to the open showroom for some reason. What am I supposed to go?
It's all right. Richard Borg totally blew us off.
Yeah,
he was sitting here at 7 o'clock.
At 7 o'clock, we were walking, and we walked.
No, I guess it was
earlier. We passed him in the parking lot.
Passed him in the parking lot at 7:02. He's
okay.
Walking out.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I agree. I mean, fine. But we're walking. He's walking out, and I'm like, Richard, what are you doing? You're going the wrong way. And he's like, 7 o'clock, man. Got to pick up my wife.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Next year. Sure. Someday we will have Richard on the show. He goes to bed at like 8 o'clock. He can't deal with that. I just can't. I can't handle it. We don't even get. We get off at 6. It's tight
time
window.
You won't go to bed till 3 a.m.
At least. Well, I live hard this week. I live very hard during the week. Anyway, all thanks right. for stopping by, man.
Cool.
Really appreciate it. I'm really excited for that Vietnam game. Sounds awesome.
Okay, cool. Yeah, see, there you go. You got a scoop.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully that thing will be out next year maybe. You know?
Hopefully.
We'll see.
We'll see how it goes. See how they put it together.
Awesome. Well, I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you.
Enjoy that Netherlands deck, too.
Oh, thanks.
Very good, Mel.
Very good.
All right, so that's it for part one of the WBC interviews on the FatCast. Upcoming episodes are going to feature some very fun interviews with Zev from Z-Man Games and Steven Bonacore from Stronghold Games, as well as a host of other game designers and other personalities. So stay tuned to the FatCast, and clear jets, everybody.
You've been listening to FatCast.
You can find us on the web at fortressat.com.
Oh, how about the threesome with Chewbacca?
How embarrassing would that be if Chewbacca walked in on you? If Chewbacca walked in. It's like, oh, Chewie, get the fuck out of here. He's like...